Good morning.
Good morning.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Brett, that's a wonderful song. 10,000 reasons. Can you number the reasons that we should be praising God? You can. We're going to be talking about faith this morning. It seems to me the more I study the Bible, the more I understand how important faith is. Faith, I think, will make the difference whether or not we're pleasing to God. When you ask the world about faith today, you guys know that you get a lot of different definitions. Some people think faith is just saying, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. Some people think that faith is being baptized, getting your name on the church roster, and attending church on a regular or semi-regular basis. That's the faith that the Bible talks about. What we'll be seeing this morning is faith is more than that. And we are going to be going up to Hebrews 11. The discussion of faith would not be complete without studying the great hall of fame that we read about in Hebrews 11. So we're going to be talking about that, and hopefully by the time we finish that, we'll have a better idea of the biblical definition of faith. And I think I better turn on my mic here. Brett asked me if I was going to have any technology this morning, and I told him no. And then he hands me this. Faith. If you read Hebrews 11, it says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a great testimony. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. And we've heard that definition of faith before. Verse 1 says that faith is the substance of things. And we know that the word substance there comes from a word of subsistence, which is a foundation of what something is built on. So what is our faith built on? And then it says, it is the King James says, it is the evidence of things not seen. Depending on your translation, it may say the conviction. It may say the assurance. But the word I like is the demonstration, because it implies action. So faith is the demonstration of things not seen. And the word, the demonstration that they refer to is so complete. The demonstration of your faith is so convincing that after it is done, there is no debate or confusion about what it's talking about, because it is very clear what the person is talking about. It cannot otherwise be anything else. Verse 2 says, For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. Some translation says therein. But it talks about elders. And we know that it's talking about the great and worthy patriarchs that you can read about in the Old Testament. But Hebrews 11 is great because
Hebrews 11 is going to name some of those patriarchs and is going to say what they did. And then the term that they talk about as a good report, literally it means the witness born to them. And the witness that we're going to read about is the witness of the scriptural records about their life. And it points directly to God, because God is the author of Hebrews 11. And that's a very important thing, because the things that we read about in Hebrew 11, in the description that you have there, it's God's testimony of their faith and their holiness. And today, we have testimonies of what we call great people. And sometimes we'll look in the history book. And Brother Bob, have you looked in the history book and seen your name in there before?
I haven't.
But if you did, it would make an impression on you, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And Sister Jo, if you were driving past a campus and you saw a name of a building that was named after you, that would be great. And every time I come to church, I take Gordon Road, and then I come up the Beller Road, I pass a street. And you know what that street is named? Now, I know it doesn't have anything to do with me or any of my relatives, but it just kind of makes you feel good when you see your name up there. But the testimony of God in His holy book is so much better than anything that man can do. The testimony of God says that He appreciates the faith that you have shown, and He appreciates what you have done to demonstrate that faith. A great commentator, A.W. Tozer, has said, in terms of faith, he said, the Bible does not recognize any faith that doesn't lead to obedience. And then he said, the Bible doesn't recognize any obedience that doesn't spring from faith. It is two sides of the same coin. And sometimes we forget that. Because sometimes when we look at our lives, that's not the kind of faith that we see. And if we want to be written in the book of life by God, we have to demonstrate the faith that we're going to be talking about in the book of Hebrews. Now, in Hebrew, if you had to pick out one character in Hebrew that you wanted to spend, I'm sorry, in Hebrews 11, that you wanted to talk about, who would that be? It'd be Abraham. A large portion of Hebrews 11 is talking about Abraham. So we're going to be talking about Abraham because he demonstrates a faith that has action to it. And when we talk about Abraham, we have to be sure we don't just consider Abraham one of those old guys in the Old Testament. Now, he was up in the years when we first, when he comes on the scene. But he can show us, no matter how many years he lived ago, he can show us the type of faith that we should have today. And there's going to be four points that I want to be making. Number one is we want to have a faith with action that goes where God tells us to go. And Abraham showed that. We want to have a faith that moves us to patience. Now, we may think that's a paradox, to move to patience. But we'll be seeing in a few minutes that sometimes we just have to wait on God. Number three, we're going to be talking about a faith that moves us to invest in the future. And then finally, we're going to be talking about a faith that moves us to give our very all, everything that we have, to God.
If you go to Hebrews 11 and you look at verse 8 through 10, it says, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place where he would receive an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents, which with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs of, with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city, which has foundation, builder and maker is God. God expects us to go where he tells us to go. And no better example of that is Abraham. Now see, Abraham had goals in his life. He had dreams. He had aspirations. And I'm sure he had career goals. But he let God determine all of those for him. He lived in the city of Ur. We know that. Now, we may not know a lot about Ur, but what I can find out about Ur is that it was a modern city. So if you had a dwelling in Ur, now, you didn't have the amenities that we take for granted, like a garbage disposal, okay? Or you might think a security alarm, unless you had children that could be your garbage disposal back in those days. Or you had a dog that would be your security alarm. But Ur did have running water. And I didn't know that when I started studying for that. But I'm sure Abraham, when he lived there, he had a trade. He had a vocation. But then one day, God speaks to Abraham. And he says to Abraham, I want you to go to land that I will show you. Not right now, but I'll show it to you. And he says, I'm going to bless you and make your name great. And he says, all the families on earth will be blessed by you. And how old was Abraham when he had this discussion with God? 75 years old. And I can almost imagine Abraham going home telling Sarah about this conversation. Now, what you may not know is that Sissy, my wife Sissy and I, our first 15 years of marriage, we moved 13 times. So I can almost appreciate the conversation that Abraham was going to have with Sarah. So he goes home and he says, well, Sarah, get packed. Pack your clothes. Pack up everything. We're moving. And of course, some spouses have this funny thing of like asking questions with this kind of conversation. So I'm sure Sarah would say, what? We're moving? What is this all about? And then she starts asking questions. The guys know these are the kind of questions that the wives ask. Is that, okay, did you get a promotion? And he would have said, not really. Did you get a new job? No, not really. A transfer? No, I didn't do that. And then finally she might throw up her hands and say, okay, where are we moving to? And you know what he said? I'm not sure. And then she says that great question, why? And he says that Jehovah God told him to go there. Now, if you read Joshua 24 and 2, you find out that the people of Ur worship other gods. Not everybody there was a Jehovah worshiper. So she might have said, well, which God is this? And he says, Jehovah God has told me to leave, and we have to leave. And we need to appreciate that when they left, they were going to a strange world. They didn't know anything about it. Different language, a different culture. Abraham had no idea about the dangers of this particular place. Sometimes I, and maybe some of you, give Abraham a hard time. Remember the stories where he was going to this land and he wasn't sure about what the people would think about Sarah, like they would want to take her and make her their wife. And so he told Sarah,
Don't say you're my wife, because they may kill me. Say you're my sister. And I used to get on him about that. I said, you got to have faith in God. But he was going to a land he knew almost nothing about the people. So I can maybe appreciate that. And when he got there, he probably had a nice house in Ur, and from then on he lived in tents. And I'm sure the people of that land did not welcome him necessarily with open arms. And so he went from a house dweller maybe to a person who lived in tents, and he moved around. And he would do that for the rest of his life. So what's the application for us today in that particular point? Well, God often asked us to either do something that we haven't done or stop doing some things that we've done that are counterproductive. And it may be a friendship that you have, and this friendship is not going to make it easy for you to go to heaven. And I think God tells us you need to break that friendship off. Sometimes it's a romantic involvement that you have. And both parties says, well, yeah, I love her and I love him. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the thing they need to be asking is, do they love God? That's the first love that you ought to be talking about. And God may say that you need to take a look at some of the habits that you have. Some people have anger issues. And we're going to be talking, we've already talked about anger this morning. It can certainly affect the way that you come across as a Christian. Maybe you have a substance abuse habit. Maybe you have an alcohol habit. Maybe you have a smoking habit. Maybe you curse. All those things God may say, if you're going to follow after me, it's going to affect your ability to serve me and to convert and bring people to me. Then you may have to ask yourself, what's more important? Number two, Abraham demonstrates a faith that tells him that sometimes you have to move, but you have to be patient. Let's turn our attention to Hebrews 11, starting with verse 11. By faith, Sarah also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. Sometimes you have to wait for God. And when God first appeared to Abraham and Sarah, Abraham was 75 years old, Sarah was 65 years old. And he tells them that he's gonna bless them. Well, what happens for the next 10 years? Well, in Abraham's and Sarah's mind, nothing. So, and stop, think about it. Somebody says, well, this is going to happen. They don't necessarily give you a time frame, but you expect for it to happen in the near future. 10 years passes and nothing happened. So therefore, Abraham and Sarah is going to help God out. And they figured out the problem is not really Abraham, the problem is Sarah. So they're going to replace Sarah with a newer, younger model. And so they take her handmaiden and they give them to Abraham, and he has a child by her. And the child's name is Ishmael. And so they think they've solved the problem. Well, God waits another 15 years and then comes to him and says, I will give you a son that will be of you and Sarah. Ishmael is 15 years at this time. Abraham is 100 and Sarah is 90. And when he tells them that, the Bible tells us that in two separate places says that they laugh. Now, was it a laugh of disbelief? Well, I think Abraham had faith. And if you can read other places where he did have a faith. But he did take a look at his 100-year-old body. And maybe he had some question about whether or not he could produce another son, because he considered himself good as dead. And Sarah, of course, was beyond her childbearing years. She was 90 years old. Somebody told me a story about a 90-year-old lady who was on a date. And her friend asked her after the date,
well, how did it go?
And she said, well, I had to slap him 4 times. And she said, well, did he get fresh with you? And she said, no, I had to wake him up. Okay. So you consider that, and you consider a 90-year-old woman trying to have a child. But we have to be patient on God, because God has his time frame. We all know people that when you invite, when you tell them you need to be here at this time, that person is always late. I have a brother like that. So you know what you do. You tell them come an hour early, and hopefully they'll get there on time. But God has his own time, and he is never late. He is always on time. And we just have to be patient. There's a story about a father who has a son. He wants to teach the son how to save. So he says, here's a piggy bank. And you put all your loose change in the piggy bank. When you get it full, we'll take it to the bank and we'll start your saving account. So the boy diligently saves and saves and saves until the piggy bank is full. They go down to the bank. And they're waited on by the bank manager, and the bank manager gives him the royal treatment. So he counts his money, he gives him a receipt, he gives him a passbook. And he says, okay, thank you. And then, but the son, the little boy, doesn't want to leave. So the bank manager goes up to him and says, okay, is there anything else I can help you with? And the boy said, I want my interest. And they said, well, you got to wait a little bit. You have to be patient. We want a faith that moves us to invest in the future, not in the present, in the future. Hebrews verse 13, chapter 11, verse 13 says, these all died in faith, and having received the promises, but having seen them afar, were sure to them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And if truly they had been called to mind the country which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Abraham looked to the future. And we as Christians should look to the future. If you've ever been to the Arlington National Cemetery, and you've read a little bit about that, you know that that property belonged originally to the grandson of Martha and George Washington. And when he died, he gave it to his daughter, who was married to Robert E. Lee, the famous general. When the Civil War came, the federal troops took over that land, and they made it their headquarters. And then after the war, they did the right thing. They gave the family money, but they made that land, that house and that land and everything, they made it a national cemetery. So when people go there, they don't see anything alive. They see a cemetery with dead people representing dead dreams, dead hopes, dead aspirations. By contrast, Abraham was looking for something that was alive, something that was vibrant. He was not stuck in the past. You never read about Abraham as he was traveling all these places, he says, maybe I want to go back to Earth. As in contrast, we know when we read about the children of Israel leaving Egypt and going wandering around for 40 years, what was the reoccurring thing? Why did you take us out of Egypt? Yes, we were slaves, but we were safe, we have food, and all that sort of thing. You never hear that about Abraham. You never hear about them saying, what have we gotten ourselves into by obeying God? You never hear them saying, my heart is in her. You never read about them clicking their heels together saying, there's no place like her. There's no place like her. Their orientation was to the future, and it was God's future. And they were okay with putting themselves in God's hand, because they knew that the future with God was much more important than what they could get down here.
True.
There's a story about a family who had a fire in, at their house, and it just destroyed almost everything that they had. So the family with some friends was sifting through the rubbish, trying to see if they could salvage anything at all. And all through that time, the friends of the family would say to them, oh, we feel so sorry for you. You have just lost everything. And you know what the family said, which I think is very poignant. They said, we have, it's just stuff. We haven't lost anything. The stuff that got burned up was destined to burn in. So everything that we have here on earth, it's either going to waste away, or if it's still present at the end of time, it's going to get burned up. And we put so much of our time and effort in things that are temporary and transient. If we put our faith in heaven, we know that the things up there are fireproof. And we don't have to worry about them burning up. The last point I want to make is, we want an actionable faith that moves us to give everything to God. And that's the fourth and last point. Verse 17 of Hebrews 11 says, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, he offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, and Isaac, your seed shall be called, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he had received him in the figurative sense. Abraham trusted God for everything. It's interesting when you read back in Genesis, I think it's Genesis 22, I think, could be wrong about that, but when God is having this conversation with Abraham, he uses some interesting terms. He says, I want you to give your son, and he says, I want you to give your only begotten son. It's almost like God wanted to be sure of the significance of the sacrifice that he was asking Abraham to make. Now, if we know a little bit about the history of Abraham and God, if you can remember, God tells Abraham, I'm going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And what's the first thing Abraham says? Well, wait a minute. Maybe if we can find a certain number of good people, then don't destroy it. In this particular incident, you don't read about Abraham trying to change God's mind. And so he accepts it. So he and Isaac and a few other men make that long journey to Mount Moriah, where he's going to make that sacrifice. And you can only imagine how painful that long walk is. And so when Abraham gets there, he builds an altar, he puts wood on the altar, he binds Isaac, he lays Isaac on top, and he picks up a knife, and he raises the knife. If you didn't know the story, you would ask yourself, is he really going to do it? But we know the story. But the question is, what would you and I have done in that situation? Well, I don't know about you, but unfortunately, I probably would have been start making excuses. I would say something like, what about the promise that you gave me? that this son of mine would be the ancestor of the Messiah. I would say that. I would be thinking in my mind, it says, God, you're not supposed to want a human sacrifice. I would maybe be saying, I'll give you anything but my son. But we don't read about that with Abraham. What we do read, though, is that when Abraham, before he went up in that mountain, he told the men that were with him, he said, stay here. My son and I will be, we're going to go worship and we shall return. I don't think in his mind he was talking about bringing back a burnt sacrifice when he said that. He knew, and we read about that in verse 19 of Hebrews 11, he says that he knew that God would somehow, some way, he would raise his son if he did kill him. So we know that as he raises that knife and begins to come down to kill his son, God stops him. And then God says to him, now I know you fear God since you did not withhold your only son, the son you love, from me. So it was a test that Abraham passed. Now we know Abraham didn't always pass the test, but we know that maybe when he didn't pass those earlier tests, it did build up his faith so that now he could do what God wanted to do and he could pass this test. It would not be fair or appropriate if we didn't take this and at least point to something in the New Testament. And of course, we're pointing to the death of Christ. Christ is on the cross. He's in pain and agony. And he says to his Father, my God, why have you forsaken me? There is nobody there to stop God's hand from allowing his son to be dead, to die. We know it with Abraham's part that God provided a sacrifice for him. But there was no sacrifice that God could use to replace this, the holy lamb of God. And Christ had to die for us. So when we think about our faith, we know that a lot of people have given up a lot for God. They have given up their houses, their property, their social standing, their jobs, their security, their bodies, even their lives. And that's the kind of faith that God demands. God desires a faith that moves us to stay. God demands a faith that has patience for his time frame. God demands a faith that helps us to invest in the future. And God demands a faith that we will give everything to him. And as we close today, the question is, what kind of faith do you have? Are you ready to invest in faith? Are you ready to try to live a life so that if God was looking for new entries in Hebrews 11, that he would look at your life and say, that person is somebody that I will bear witness of their faith. And that's the challenge that we all have today as I close, and the invitation is yours. If you feel like you haven't invested in your future, in your spiritual future, like the Bible asks, you have that opportunity to come in. And if you have invested, but you have withdrawn too much so that you need to come back to God, you have that opportunity now as we stand and sing.